We cross over live now to the UK, getting a world perspective on global stories from a BBC lens. A good friend, Rich Preston, joins us on the line. Rich, how have you been? Are you well?
Yes, very well, thanks, Lester. Good to talk to you again. Welcome back after your paternity leave.
Thank you very much. I heard you also took some time off. So I'm glad you're back. I'm glad you're safe. Nice talking to you again.
Likewise, yes.
We're going to be starting in Germany. And finally, after what, three, almost 4 months, Germany will be choosing its new chancellor this week. It's come after months of negotiations between three political parties, determining their differences, what they have similarities in to build this coalition government and finally to elect a new chancellor that will take over after 16 years of Angela Merkel.
Yeah, that's right. As you said, you know, several months ago, it was September that federal elections were held back in Germany. And this was really a double layered vote. Officially, it was about choosing the parties. But ultimately, of course, as you say, the party with the biggest share is then on track to see its candidate become chancellor after 16 years of Angela Merkel's leadership, known by many in the country as Mutti, German for mother. Of course, that all hinges on which parties can form a coalition, can work together to form a coalition. The party that got the biggest share of the votes was the SPD, the Social Democrats, and they got just over 25%. Their candidate for chancellor is Olaf Scholz. The second biggest party was the CDU-CSU. That's actually the party of Angela Merkel. And then in third place was the Greens. So we're on track for Olaf Scholz to be the next chancellor. And then it's only at that point that he's appointed, when he's sworn in by the president, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, will Mrs. Merkel's 16 years officially come to an end. Now, it wasn't really a surprise, Lester, that his party won the most votes in the election, because he's seen as a safe pair of hands. Germany, traditionally risk averse. And of course, at this moment in time as well, post-Brexit, the EU's been kind of shaken up a bit by that. And then, of course, COVID and the effect that's had around the world, especially on economic factors. Olaf Scholz really was seen as the man who could have a steady hand on the wheel through the years ahead. Now, he has the nickname. We said earlier Angela Merkel's called Mutti for mother. Olaf Scholz has the nickname the Scholzomat, because he's considered a bit robotic and kind of automatous. He's the country's former finance minister. He actually served as vice chancellor under Angela Merkel in her grand coalition. And it was Mr. Scholz who oversaw the government's economic response to COVID, including a domestic stimulus package worth 103 billion euros. As part of his potential future leadership, he's promised to build more houses. He's promised to stop rent costs going up. He's promised faster action on climate, but critically without endangering jobs. Germany is the European Union's biggest greenhouse gas emitter, and it also has a pretty heavy fossil fuel economy. He wants to turn Germany into a leading exporter of green energy technology. He also said he wants to increase the minimum wage from its current just over 9 euros an hour to 12 euros an hour. That's gone down especially well with young people in the country. And internationally, the EU is generally happy. As I said, safe pair of hands. Angela Merkel, you know, at the helm of the EU throughout her 16 years, the bloc's biggest economy. So generally, pretty positive response to the news that this week Olaf Scholz will be sworn in as Germany's
like
next chancellor.
The almost venturing on trope or stereotype areas as the perfect German technocrat.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mentioned the minimum wage going up. There was a bit of a concern that him being this kind of safe pair of hands would be a turn off for young voters. And indeed, the Green Party, you know, traditionally more popular with young voters, did do better in this election than they have previously. So he really needed to appeal to the younger voters, the graduates, the people just going into their first jobs. And so this minimum wage push of his has really helped him in that favour. And as I say, at home domestically and also internationally, really hope that he is the safe pair of hands on the wheel for the years ahead.
It's that time of the year where Time magazine brings out the person of 2020. Last year was joint holders of that title in Joe Biden and Kamala Harris after the election to the presidency and the vice presidency respectively. But what are some of the expectations for 2021? Again, we've been 2 years into a pandemic where scientists have been top of mind, but also at the same time with many people venturing into their lives into the online space, the social media space. There's also influencers that are also becoming quite prominent. I would argue maybe not the most important, but the most prominent people in particularly young people's minds today.
Yeah, it's funny you mention influencers, because we've got a mix of old and new this week, Lester. So it's on Thursday that Time magazine will be revealing its pick for the person or group that had the most influence on events in 2021. As usual, the winner will appear on the cover of a special edition of the magazine. Incidentally, the very first winner was Charles Lindbergh back in 1927, the man who completed the first solo flight across the Atlantic. Other winners, Queen Elizabeth, Barack Obama, Mahatma Gandhi. So, you know, it's a big deal. It's not always about being a good person. Adolf Hitler and Joseph Stalin were both given the honor in 1938 and 39, respectively. And it's not even always about being a person. The computer won the award in 1982, heralding the incoming information age. And Planet Earth was awarded the title in 1988 amid growing concerns about damage to the environment. But COVID really, I think, is going to shape things this year for Time magazine. High odds that it might go collectively to doctors, nurses and first responders, recognising their efforts during the pandemic. The World Health Organization, strong odds there that as an organisation, as a group, that might get the title. But also, you know, we've had a year of other movements as well. Climate activists and the Black Lives Matter protests, they have good odds behind them as well. On an individual level, Anthony Fauci, the US infectious diseases expert, he's fairly highly tipped to be given the honour. Or potentially, slight outsider here, New Zealand's Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern. Mm. She was widely praised for her management of coronavirus, generally kept it out of New Zealand and pretty tightly controlled when it did creep in. So we're going to have to wait and see on Thursday what Time magazine publishes. But we're also watching out what Forbes magazine do this week. They're publishing their World's Most Powerful Women report tomorrow, an annual list of the most powerful women in the world. Melinda Gates potentially going to be on that list, relatively high up. The Melinda and Bill Gates Foundation spending millions of dollars a year, particularly on trying to eradicate disease. The Queen, interestingly, she always features on the list somewhere, but normally around kind of, well, last year she was 46th. But since the death of Prince Philip, she's now governing or sort of running the UK as head of state and various other countries as head of state on her own for the first time in her life. So maybe she'll be near the top spot. Nancy Pelosi as well, especially after the Capitol attacks in January. Jacinda Ardern as well, as we've mentioned, Greta Thunberg or Tsai Ing-wen, the president of Taiwan. They're possibly all going to feature highly on the Forbes Most Powerful Women report. But another interesting report Forbes are putting out this week is the highest paid influencers on TikTok. Mm. Now, it won't surprise you, they're mostly younger and the money is mostly around the world of fashion, cosmetics. People earning millions of dollars and with millions of followers. Many Americans in there. For example, 19-year-old Josh Richards earns over $1 million a year. Addison Rae, another American, earns $5 million a year. She's recently launched her own cosmetic range. So the old and new in the term, in the world of names to watch out for this week, Lester.
I have a niece, Rich, and she mentions TikTok influencers' names as if they're known business people. There is an economy of influencers on social media, which me as a pre-middle-aged person have absolutely no idea who these people are, but apparently they're influencing young people's lives that to such an extent that the videos and the views and the likes that they get online, you know, makes them multimillionaires. It's absolutely interesting.
Absolutely huge, yeah.
And finally, a lot of the attention has been on the Omicron variant. It has been a couple of weeks since Omicron first hit headlines. It did cause initial panic. It still does here in South Africa. We just had a pediatrician on air saying, yes, wait, let us wait for the research and the data that comes out on the impact of Omicron here in South Africa. But how are other countries reacting to it?
Yeah, this was an interesting one. Quick reactions by lots of countries, including the US and the UK. One of those first reactions, as your listeners will well know, was banning travel from several Southern African countries, as well as reintroducing testing on arrival back in the UK. There was quite a lot of complaint from many of those Southern... Cyril Ramaphosa saying it was discriminatory, targeting Africa in particular, and... they've absolutely got a valid point. You know, the virus was also quickly detected in Germany, Belgium, Australia, but we didn't close down travel from those countries. Nigeria has now been added to the UK's red list. The Nigerian High Commissioner told the BBC just within the last hour that this is a kind of apartheid against African nations. You know, really quite strong language, quite a lot of anger, especially in the run-up to Christmas. You know, there's close links between Britain and South Africa, Nigeria, etc. And so to stop travel between those countries when they're not the only places where the virus can be found, it's now been found in more than 30 countries, a lot of upset about that. The thing about Omicron is we know bits about it, but it's mostly the unknown that's the concern. And governments saying that they really need just a couple of extra weeks to do a bit more research on it. And they were criticized for not acting quickly enough when Delta emerged. And so they say they're acting quickly now to try and stop the spread so we can do more research. And that's really what we're looking out for this week, Lester, is this initial research coming out. We know that Omicron can be more infectious. It can reinfect people, even if they've already had the virus. And it seems to be affecting younger people in ways COVID-19 hasn't previously. We're keeping a close eye on Asia as well. Lots of Asian countries in the early days of the pandemic closed their borders quickly. They've had kind of practice of this, if you like, with things like SARS in earlier years. Japan has already tightened its border restrictions to foreign travelers. It had only just relaxed them. We're keeping an eye on countries like Thailand. You know, it's getting near Christmas. Big, big tourist time for them. Their tourist economy has been hit very hard by border closures. They've recently opened them up. Are they going to close them again because of Omicron? We're going to have to watch out for that this week.
Rich Preston, he joins us again and hopefully next week from the United Kingdom, giving us a outlook of global importance from a BBC lens. Rich, thanks so much for joining us here. Hope to chat to you soon.
Thanks for having me, Lester. Good to talk to you again.